feel like we're, as a fan base, turning into like we're getting all dressed up for the big date.
And they're not going to show up?
And they're never going to show up.
Oh,
and eventually, we're just going to be sitting in the kitchen, crying in a bowl of ice cream, sobbing about it with our friends.
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop Podcast, episode 229. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune comes on the show to talk about what we learned about the new coaching staff and players in spring football practice. He also opines on the QB situation and whether the men's basketball team might be better next season. Matt and I then chat about men's volleyball, spring football, men's basketball, and we preview Major League Baseball. This is the Rise and Shot Podcast. Catch us on iTunes. Catch us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com and listen to us yap right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, Salt Lake Tribune writer Jay Drew. Jay, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks. Good to be back on.
So, obviously, spring practice has wrapped up, and you know, you wrote a piece in the Tribune this weekend about kind of where status of the team, where we're at. So let's start there, Jay, with what did we learn about this coaching staff and about this team that maybe we didn't know before spring practice?
The biggest thing I think on the coaching staff is these guys are not afraid to change things up. I mean, and I'm not only talking position changes, I'm schematically on both sides of the ball, they've changed everything. You know, obviously, Francis Bernard moving from running back to linebacker is kind of a big thing. Akili Davis moving from receiver to defensive back. Even within the defense, Mike Hanneman has moved from corner to safety. So you got all those position moves, and then you also have just the defense is definitely trending toward playing a 4-3. After, you know, years and years of the 3-4 under Bronco. So then the defensive backs are going to play a lot more man press coverage, a lot less zone or cover two that we've played in the past. And then on offense, obviously with Ty Detmer coming in, they've scrapped the go hard, go fast offense of Robert and I. They're huddling up after, you know, every play almost. They, quarterback is under center. We saw very, very little shotgun in the media viewing portions of practices and in the scrimmage. So it's just a change all throughout the whole program. There's literally the personnel is the same or pretty much, but they're in different places a lot of times, and obviously the schemes are different. So that's the word that I would use is just change. Everything has changed.
Yeah, good. I mean, when you change your entire staff, well, I guess there are a couple of holdovers, but not too many, and not the ones necessarily making the big decisions. One of the decisions the coaching staff is going to have to make is that decision at quarterback between Taysom Hill and between Tanner Mangum. Let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, obviously, we didn't get to see Taysom participate in the scrimmage, though he did was participating a little bit towards the end of spring practice in some non-contact work. What do we think we know about that? Is it as open as it seems like from the outside as you talk to folks? Or do you think Tanner or Taysom is the favorite and it's going to take somebody having a remarkable or terrible fall camp to change what may already be decided?
You know, it's kind of easy to look at what happened in spring and say that Tanner is the favorite. But Taysom actually did more in the spring than going in they thought he would do. Of course, he missed the last week, the scrimmage in the last week because of the death of his brother. So he went back up to Idaho for that funeral and that sort of thing. But I would say it's still wide open. Rarely do you have a coach, Ty Detmer or Kalani Sitake or any coach, mention one without the other. They haven't tipped their hand one way or the other. So I honestly think that in Ty Detmer's head, and really I think he's going to be the one that's going to make the call. You know, they'll paint it as Sitake making the call because he's the head coach. But But I really think it'll come down to who Ty Detmer feels the most comfortable with. And he's not tipping his hand. It's as wide open as they said it would be, you know, 2 months ago, when it was announced, you know, Taysom was returning to BYU. So it's just totally up in the air. I just, right now, I cannot say one guy is ahead of the other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough decision, but it's better than having two terrible quarterbacks and trying to pick between, right? So they've got a little bit of a luxury. You mentioned Ty Detmer, and obviously the coaching staff in general seems to be a little bit more media friendly than the staff was, and maybe that's understatement there, but than the staff was under Bronco Mendenhall. Tell me about that and how that's changed. I get the impression, though, that access has not necessarily changed, just maybe relationships. Is that a fair qualification, or has there been a fundamental change in the way these guys deal with the media and the fans?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot different. You're right. Access is, we actually got less access in spring camp as far as watching than we did under Mendenhall. There was not one single practice where the entire practice was open to the media this spring. And that was the case under Mendenhall. I don't know if it's because they were practicing in the mornings or what the reasoning is, but so the access is actually not as good, but the whole atmosphere is just welcoming. The example I use is about the first week of spring camp, all of a sudden a bunch of leather couches showed up in the football office's lobby where basically the media meets to do interviews after practices, both during the season and during spring camp. And all of a sudden there were all these leather couches, and they were inviting, and somebody mentioned to Kalani that the media might never leave, and he said, good, we like you guys here, or something to that effect. So it's just been totally welcoming. Kalani, after he'll do the, you know, little media sit down with us once a week or so, a Bronco used to do that and then just pretty much make a beeline to his office. But Kalani will just kind of sit back and say, okay, you know, tell me about you guys, or, you know, when the microphones are off and the cameras are off, just kind of, hey, let's just chat and get to know each other a little bit. And so that's been really welcome as well. As far as, you know, it looks like he really wants to get started off on the right foot with the media, and that's, you know, so far so good. And then the assistant coaches he brought in are just, I mean, they're just warm, friendly guys, like Ty Detmer, Reno Mahe, and Ed Land from SUU. All those guys are, you know, they're used to dealing with the media. They're really friendly, and so far so good. It's been a good start.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I mean, we never saw Bronco in the student section at a basketball game. So yeah. certainly a different feel to the coaching staff. We'll get you out one more before we switch to basketball. And again, we're on with Jay Drew from the Salt Lake Tribune on one more football question is who will be playing offensive line next year? Obviously, there's potential suspensions and health issues. Do we have a good feel for that offensive line? Because if Ty Detmer is going to have a good offense, he's got fantastic skill position players. But right now, I think maybe the biggest concern is depth and or health of the offensive line. Do we have a good picture there for what that's going to look like, or is that just going to have to be a wait and see till fall camp?
Yeah, there's two main areas of concern there. You got obviously at center where T. John Caroma is not enrolled in school. He withdrew on his own in mid to late January. He's got into some legal trouble. It's basically slowly kind of coming out, some of his issues. There's that. And Parker Daw has kind of manned that center position. He's been kind of up and down in spring camp. They've tried other guys at that position, which kind of would show me that they're, number one, worried about T. John not coming back, and number two, worried about Parker Dawes, you know, ability to play center, you know, in a Division I football game. So that's a huge concern right there. The second is Kyle Johnson, the two-year starting guard, is having some sort of knee surgery or had. So he's missed spring camp. And they say and do all the right things as far as him coming back in the fall. But that remains to be seen. So those are the two spots. They do have a lot of talented guys that are back. They only really lost Riker Matthews to graduation. So Brad Wilcox and Cooney Canuch and Louis Lapuaho and Austin Hoyt are pretty good offensive linemen. So there is some talent there. I think it'll just have to come together with the return of Johnson and Caroma. If one or both of those guys can't return, then they've got a little bit of an issue, but that remains to be seen.
All right. So let's finish here with basketball. You covered the team in New York when they went to the Final Four of the NIT. Obviously, they ended the season better than they had in the West Coast Conference tournament with some wins against some quality opponents in the NIT tournament. The big question, of course, now is everyone's looking forward to next year. Last year, at the beginning of the season, people were saying, wow, this team could be better than the year before, even with losing their all-time leading scorer. Now, of course, all these guys coming back from missions and or coming straight out of school, very heralded recruits all playing together for the first time together. Is it unfair to think that this team could be better next year than they were this past season?
I don't think that's unfair. I think, we know Eric Meek is a good ball player. We saw him as a freshman average almost a double-double. So he's pretty much, we don't know what TJ Hawes, what he brings exactly, if he's going to be able to, you know, pick up where he left off from his high school days when he was a sensational player. I'll just from watching practice, this Bryant, I forgot his first name all of a sudden, the transfer from Elon College, and I'm just drawing a blank on his name. He'll be eligible, obviously, sat out this year. He's really good. If you watch him in practice, you can see where he could be one of the better players on the team next year. What is his name?
I'm pulling it up. I'm pulling it up. I'll get there. But anyway, what about some of the guys that are on the team now? Do you envision that Kyle Davis, that we've got big men coming back, transfers, other things. Kyle Davis had kind of an up and down year, was better towards the in those last few games of the NIT, but struggled in the middle part of the year. Is he a guy that's going to kind of be forgotten with all of these other guys coming in? Or do you think some of these guys like Davis and Jordan Chapman and a few others that were kind of bit players this year will still have a role next year, even when the new guys show up?
Yeah, I think they'll still have a role. I think obviously Corbin Kafusi is going to probably be coming off the bench. There's rumors of saying that he might go back to football. I asked him the other day, and he just grinned and said, "Where did you hear that?" So I would think that if that were true, he probably would have told me. But obviously he's going to have to battle Eric Mika for playing time. I think Kyle Davis is going to still start at the four, at least to start the season. They're happy with the way he played this year, the coaching staff is. And so, he might slowly get phased out as the season goes on. But I think Jordan Chapman showed that he's going to be a good role player. I don't think he'll ever be a star. I think maybe what'll be interesting to see if Jamal Ates, who battled injuries and just confidence issues all season long and basically wasn't getting off the bench the second half of the season at all. It'll be interesting to see if he returns. I can't imagine that he'd be getting any more playing time, with the talent they have coming back next year, but, that's obviously up to him. Nick Emery's only going to get better, so I see him obviously you know, nailing down a starting spot. They're going to struggle a little bit to find a wing to replace what Zach Sell just gave them. Of course, he's going on a mission to Iowa. So that'll be a bit of a hole in the roster that I'm not exactly sure who can step up and fill that role. But to answer your question, I think the potential is there for them to be better. So it looks like they're going to play a pretty good preseason schedule. They announced just recently they're going to play USC in a little Hall of Fame Day tournament in LA at Staples Center. They're going to play Illinois back in Chicago. So Colorado's visiting, and then of course the Weber State and Utah State are always good in-state opponents. So it's a pretty good schedule next year preseason, and one they need to get their RPI kind of back into the 30s and 40s after it fell out of that this year.
Yeah, absolutely. If nothing else, Jay, it's going to be fun to watch these guys develop. And like you said, I don't think it's unrealistic to think they'll be better. Well, thanks, Jay, for coming on the podcast. We'll, of course, encourage everybody to go and read your coverage of the Cougars at the Salt Lake Tribune. And we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Adam.
CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Matt, what's up, dude?
How are you, man?
Good. Before we get to that, Matt, we're going to do something else, but we're going to talk about the Final Four and your, well, not front row seat, but very good seats.
I was a few rows up.
So you're still coming off that high. But before we do that, let's jump into the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
At Justin D. Sweeney says,
Sweeney.
There you go.
I was like, why is he pausing?
Why am I pausing? Because I'm, you know, sometimes I talk over the Sweeney, and I feel bad about it afterwards.
Wow, you're really bad at that.
Yeah, I am. That's why we have you do it. He says, I can get Star Wars at Redbox tonight. That's true. Star Wars came out on video. The Blu-ray today, Tuesday the 4th or the 5th. What day are we on? The 5th. But it was out digital last Friday. Matt, he's got a good question. Shouldn't they have waited until May the 4th
to release the movie? That makes a lot of sense, actually. Now that he brings it up, I'm pretty disappointed that they didn't do that.
Yeah, Disney marketing. So much for their great marketing.
That one's not even hard, guys. Come on.
Bunch of idiots. I'm just kidding. So then he follows up, Matt, with your MLB previews on the podcast with Matt. Tests my resolve to continue to listen to entire episode streak. Hashtag endure. Here's what we're going to do, boys and girls. Hashtag RS to the end if you make it all the way.
Yeah.
All right. And I should have said that towards the end because now they could just hashtag it any they want. Never mind. There'll be a secret hashtag at the end to see if you made it. How's that?
It's just kind of weird.
Yeah, it is kind of weird, but that's what we do here. Matt, so you... We're recording this on Tuesday night. On Monday night was arguably one of the... Okay, let me rephrase. Arguably the most dramatic ending of a national championship game in NCAA history.
Yeah, it was unreal.
If you haven't seen it, I don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, I don't know what rock you've been under, but...
So Matt, walk us through it from your perspective. You were on the Villanova's side of the court, so that play was coming towards you, correct?
That's correct. The play was coming towards me, and I was on the side of the court where the shot was taken. I was towards the corner, towards the baseline, about 15 rows up.
So what was the atmosphere? I imagine like most Final Four contests, most of the people in the stadium, you said it had 74,000?
Yeah.
Most people in the stadium are not rooting for one team or the other. Would that be a fair statement?
I don't know. There was a pretty respectable showing from both schools. They had some pretty loud chants. But to say 50% of that 75,000 was probably, you know, were either Oklahoma, Syracuse fans, locals, or just general sport fans. I mean, that may be fair, but the crowd was very much into the game.
But my point is, like, a lot of people are reacting when that shot goes, both the North Carolina impossible three-point shot, Watching it live, was it? Could you appreciate how difficult that first shot was?
I had thought there was no way that shot was going in. It looked so awkward. I thought for sure that was the end of it. You know, because we had said right before that possession, we were talking, the three or four of us that were there, about, well, they need to get a shot off with more than 6 seconds left on the clock if they're going to try and, you know, trade two for one, right? Get a shot in, get the foul, and try and get the ball back. And you could feel people start to panic as the clock continued to tick, and you could see that a little bit on the floor, but the fans were really starting to freak out because they knew they needed to get that shot off. And I think that's part of what forced such an awkward looking shot.
Right. Oh yeah. It was a crazy shot, but he makes it. And then of course Jenkins comes down and has become a legend. So Matt, did you see, or was it only in vines and GIFs afterwards, Jay Wright's unbelievably cool reaction to that shot?
I only saw that in vines and GIFs afterwards. The confetti was so thick and started to fall so quickly after the shot fell. It was like a blizzard on the court. You really couldn't see anything.
So Matt, isn't that bad? Like, say his shot had been after the buzzer, which it was not. He got it off with half a second, which is actually not that much. But he got it off with half a second. Shouldn't they not be dropping it until the officials have had a chance to review that play?
It would have taken him 20 minutes at least to restore order.
Oh, at least, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just to get all that crap off the floor.
Yeah. It was like a snowstorm of confetti.
Yeah. I don't know. It seemed a little crazy to me.
The shot was pretty clearly good.
Yeah. You're right.
They only really had to review it because that's an NCAA rule.
Right. Oh, yeah. And anything that close.
It was never really in question.
No. I don't think so. I mean, we all saw the backboard light up red, and the ball was, you know, halfway to the goal, right? Mm-hmm. So Matt, what was the most remarkable thing besides the shot that, of course, that you got to see last night?
Well, besides the shot?
Besides the shot, like, what was cool?
Well, there were a couple things that I thought were really cool. One was being able to see, it felt different to me being able to watch it, how tight the defense was and how difficult it was to get the ball down low to anybody or really move the ball around much at all. The windows were extremely tight. I thought for both teams, I was really impressed with some of what they did in that respect. Another thing that was interesting was there was a really obnoxious North Carolina fan sitting next to us.
Mm.
And
imagine
I'm
that.
Not judging North Carolina fans by this one guy or whatever, but yeah, at one point the seat next to me freed up. And so the guy on the other end of our group came and sat next to me. And then, his seat, he had a little bit better angle by coming down to my end anyway. And then the seat next to him freed up. And so this stranger, this UNC fan, it was a stranger. Now, granted, my friend had moved over there in order to get away from this guy. But when this guy saw that seat freed up, he moved over and sat next to him again. It was awesome. It was really pretty hilarious. But anyway,
awesome.
it was a good time. And just the showing by both schools. And that was one of the things I thought about. And I know Tom Homo made reference to, you know, maybe I'll see you all in Phoenix next year for the Cougs in the Final Four. I think it would be so much fun to be able to go to something like that for your team and have it be your team.
In a
game like that, I think, you know, I think even for UNC fans in a game like that, something that's going to be remembered in college basketball history for a long time. But it kind of also struck me that BYU as a program travels very well. I think we can compete with some of these elite programs the way that we travel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And obviously, if it's in Phoenix, there's quite a few BYU grads that live in that area, so you wouldn't even need people to travel to have a good showing necessarily. Well, Matt, I'd have to say I did not have Villanova winning. I had Kansas, so my bracket was busted as usual.
Yeah, I had Michigan State, so I've been out for a long time.
Yeah. How'd that work out for you, Michigan State? Hmm. So, Matt, we'll move on from the Final Four, and we've got a couple of cool things to cover here in a minute, but also on the show later we will have talk football talk and basketball talk, and our Major League Baseball preview is, as Justin Sweeney pointed out. But
spoiler alert, I'm a homer.
Yes, spoiler alert, yeah, that's no need to point that out. Nationals will be winning the World Series and every major award when Matt, for the National League, will, you know.
MLB preview complete.
Yep. All right, we're done.
You're welcome, Sweeney.
Yeah. All right. So, but first up, before we get to that, let's do the CougarFan.com. Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
So, Matt, unfortunately, I didn't get to see any of this because it was not on TV where I could watch it. But BYU men's volleyball had a spectacular weekend, defeating number one UCLA on the road both nights. Dropped two sets, won six. Now they are the number one ranked team in all of the land. Jake Lagolis gets a Player of the Week honors nationally, 25 kills, 12 digs, and 7 blocks over two nights. Matt, this is now the team. This is what everyone's saying. This is the team to beat.
You know, and we, you know, looking at what this team has done, you know, they've had some very good stretches. This is a very, very good volleyball team.
Yes.
And so, you know, and I think even early on we talked about their ability to compete for a championship here. So I think we're just seeing basically, you know, we're seeing what we thought we were going to see. They are who we thought we were. Who we thought they were.
That's right. That's right, Dennis Green. They are who we thought they were. Well, at least
go ahead and crown them.
I did not think they were going to be this good. I'll be honest. I thought they'd, you know, have a nice season, but I didn't think this was a year they would contend for the national championship. And obviously, now unfortunately, it's probably a disappointment if they don't at least get to that championship match. Matt, if they won it all, don't you have to start talking about them as, you know, maybe one of the best teams we've ever had?
I mean, I think if they win it all, you have to talk to
them. But you know, I don't think I would have thought that coming in based on, I mean, there's a lot of good talent on this roster, but it may not be as star heavy as some of the others have been. But as a team, they are looking fantastic.
Yeah, if you go back, I mean, there were some pretty star heavy teams that have come through. And I know I'm kind of partial to time that I was there, you know, but some of those teams in the late 90s were, you know, just packed.
Yes. You know, future Olympic and international stars as well on those teams. Matt, the baseball team also continues rolling, now 23-4 and 7-2 in their conference after sweeping Portland. They did lose to Arizona today. They've got San Diego coming up this weekend in Provo, or is that one in San Diego? I don't remember. I think it's in San Diego. And then a week from today, they will play Utah, the University of Utah. You may have heard of them. Hide the women and the children. It could get dangerous.
Hey, didn't we cancel all of these? Didn't all this get canceled? Didn't the University of Utah get canceled?
Yeah, I think so. I think so, Matt. So maybe this game isn't actually happening. Maybe. Wait a second. Can you play a rivalry game and not act like complete morons?
There's only one way to find out.
I guess we'll find out. They've already played this year once, by the way, in Salt Lake. This game is in Provo. Matt, NFL draft. Bronson Cafuzzi is getting a lot of buzz. NewJersey.com or NJ.com, as well as some other SB Nation sites, have talked about him in relation to specific teams, but also as a potential sleeper, like a first rounder. Could slip into the first or early second round. Matt, we've had him pegged as kind of a third or fourth round draft pick. Do you think there's enough buzz now where that's more, or do you think this is just draft Knicks filling up airtime with a guy that maybe nationally isn't as well known?
I think this might just be guys trying to create a buzz, find someone else to talk about. We're into that kind of period leading up into the draft where all the big stories are pretty obvious. And so they start digging a little bit for that next tier of guys that maybe people haven't talked much about. But at the same time, I mean, these guys aren't just sitting in their basement making this stuff up, right? I mean, they are talking to scouts and looking at film and things. So, but am I ready to jump on board and buy that he slips into a late first round pick? I'm not sure I'm really there yet. I still see him as kind of in that same space we've talked about previously as a third or fourth round draft pick. But as you get closer to the draft, you know how this thing goes. I mean, it's crazy. These guys, it's like you get into the draft and everybody kind of forgets about everything that happened in actual football games, and it becomes all about intangibles and stuff people did at the combine and how people present themselves in interviews and things. And I think in some of those spaces, Bronson Cafusi could do really well for himself.
Yeah, and he's an athletic freak, right? I mean, similar to Ziggy Ansah, though maybe not as athletically gifted as Ziggy. I mean, he's tall. He's got a large wingspan. He's a two-sport guy. I mean, he's got a lot of things about him that I think could cause his stock to rise, but I'm with you. I think you should keep your expectations at a third or fourth round draft choice. Matt, let's slip right into football. We'll start off with recruiting. There was a couple of commits in March, 4 to be exact, as well as 13 offers. The only commit I'm really going to mention, Matt, is a 6'5", 240-pound tight end from San Clemente High School in California. That's Isaac Rex. I love it because he's got a picture of himself when he announced it on the 19th of March of him in a BYU jersey and helmet from when he was just a young lad. Class of 2017. Matt, this is kind of if we're going to talk about the offense here in a minute, but isn't this like an indication of this offense is going to be an offense that is going to feature tight ends in the future?
And you know what? I think it's great. I think it's exciting. I think that's the type of offense that we'll be able to get the athletes that we need to be competitive running that type of offense. I think it opens up a lot of stuff that you can do, create some opportunities for other positions on the field. So who doesn't love, if you've been paying attention to BYU football for a long time, I mean, you've been longing with the rest of us for some tight ends.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's get that into the offense. Like, let's score some touchdowns with this stuff again.
Yep, and they made an offer to another tight end, Bentley Hanshaw, same class of 2017. He's also out of California, Moorpark, California. His dad played the last name Hanshaw might be familiar. He played in the 90s, and currently he has scholarship offers from San Jose State and Utah State. Again, I would imagine we'd be the front runner at this point, but you never know. So anyway, Matt, that is it on the recruiting front. Let's talk a little bit about spring practice, okay? Defenders Jay Drew writes in the Salt Lake Tribune last week that the defenders are excited about the change. Matt, is this do you think this is real or just one of those things like it's a new coach and what else are the players supposed to say when a reporter says, so are you excited about the change?
I mean, if they're smart, they should just say that they are excited about the change, right? And there's two pieces about this that I like. I could like this for two different reasons, both of which are a little bit different. I could like this because it's great that these guys are excited about the change. They've bought into what the coaches are doing. They're enthusiastic about what they're going to be out there trying to do and make themselves better and push themselves to be successful in a new situation. I might also like it just because the players are saying the right stuff, and which means they respect the coaches at least enough to handle things that way, where they've bought into the system at least on some level that they're saying all the right things, and even if they're not really excited about it. But at the end of the day, I still love the idea of moving guys around, trying to figure out what the best way is to get the best athletes on the field at the same time and put the individuals and the team in a situation where they're most likely to succeed that way.
Yeah, see, I think the defensive scheme is going to change. It's a new defensive coordinator.
Right.
There will be good and bad with any change. You know, if they do more press coverage, people are going to get mad because there are going to be more throws potentially over the top, right, and things like that. If you do those four down linemen, you know, there are some advantages and disadvantages. Like you said, though, the personnel may be a good fit. I think where we're going to really see the changes on the offense, right? I mean, the defense, I think, will play aggressively, and Broncos defense, maybe we're a little bit more bend but not break, but they blitzed a lot, which is aggressive. Matt, the offensive side, though, Jay Drew said it here on the podcast and also wrote in the Salt Lake Tribune last week, they're going to line up under center. When was the last time we had somebody line up under center most of the time?
It's been a while, but
it's been a long time, and that is not what Taysom Hill and Tanner have been running for the last couple of years, though I don't think that'll be an issue. Matt, bigger change from your perspective, offense or defense for next year?
Right now, I feel like offense. I think that there's a lot that, from an approach perspective that I think is still going to be the same. I think they'll play extremely aggressive. I think that the types of personalities that have been successful in Bronco Mendenhall offenses will be the same types of personalities and skill sets that will be successful in this defense. I'm sorry, did I say Bronco offense? I meant defense. But when you look at what this offense is going to do, the change is just, the difference is so stark. If you have a quarterback under center, you're going to be doing things so much differently, especially the way that the offense has evolved over the past few years, where there was this, even if you go back to Anai 1.0, and then you have the Doman era, right? And then you get an I 2.0, you get the go fast, go hard. Then you get, let's go like a little bit less fast and just a slightly fewer plays and how that kind of modified. So as you look at the way the offense has evolved over the past several years, I'm really excited about what this offense is going to look like and to get into a place where we can start running something as a program consistently and start recruiting players into that who are going to fit.
Now, this is the offense that's being described. More tight ends, quarterback under center, maybe more run heavy. This is the offense that many of us, when Brandon Doman took over, hoped we would see. Almost like a return to BYU's glory days, but more, I was thinking at the time, Stanford and Jim and Harbaugh and his Stanford teams and the offenses they ran. And I thought it fits our personnel very well as far as who we can recruit. Of course, that did not happen. The Doman offenses were an unmitigated disaster. Part of that might have been quarterback play, of course, but a lot of it was play calling and scheming. Matt, on the flip side, now you've got an offensive genius in Ty Detmer, if we want to use that term, but he's never run offense outside of high school. So do we really even know what it's going to look like?
No, I mean, we can guess, and I think from a certain perspective, we do know. We understand what the concepts are that he's going to try and implement based on what he's talking about for personnel, right?
Right.
But really, I mean, you do make a point. I mean, we don't know exactly what he's going to do. Does it sound like something that'll be run heavy? Are they talking about things saying they're going to run the ball a little bit more? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's part of the reason you put the quarterback under center. But what exactly that's going to look like, what do you do with a healthy Taysom Hill and Tanner Mangum and all of that? I think there's so many variables still out there that it's pretty hard to know exactly what Detmer's got in his head.
Yeah, there's a lot, and they're going to keep it tight to the vest. Matt, the biggest area that I'm worried about on the offensive side is the offensive line. There is a lot of returning players there, but our best offensive lineman from last year, Tijon Kuroma, still don't know what his status is going to be for the fall. He's had some issues withdrew from school. And then, of course, there have been an injury or two as well. Matt, I thought the offensive line got better throughout last year, but it was still not necessarily the number one strength of the team. And I think the years before that, Taysom Hill and Tanner, because of his scrambling ability as well, kind of covered up some of those flaws. Do I have reason to be worried about that the Achilles heel for this offense in 2016 could be that offensive line?
I don't think it's out of line to be worried about the offensive line that way. I didn't mean to say the word line so much there. But when you go back when 2J came in, the expectation was that he was going to instill this culture of linemen. And you and I talked about that a lot. We were going to have mean guys that really went after defenses, big guys, strong guys, scrappy guys. And the offensive line as a unit didn't really quite ever really live up to that billing. They showed some signs of that. They showed some progress in that direction. And I don't know if it was just a matter of time until Coach 2J was able to really instill that as a culture in the system, but they never really quite got there. So what we don't know right now is, was it just a matter of time until that developed, or do we not have the right people in there to run it that way? Because at the end of the day, even with what we believe we're expecting as a Ty Detmer offense, That's the type of offensive lineman that you need.
Yeah.
And if we don't have those guys, we're going to struggle.
Yeah, yeah. And you need it for that, as you say, for that Ty Detmer offense, whatever it ends up being in its final form. Matt, let's move on to basketball. BYU is reported to have a game with USC at Staples Center in December. That is, you know, adding to an out-of-conference schedule that's shaping up to be a little better than maybe this past year, which will help in the end. Matt, I know we've talked about this a lot. Darnell Dixon, friend of the podcast, he thinks next year's going to be better. Jay Drew on this podcast earlier thinks that's not out of line to expect this team to be better. Matt, you know, we said this last year that the team was going to be better. There's a lot of moving parts. Guys coming back from missions. You lose the best player on your team in Kyle Collinsworth. You lose a very dependable scorer in Chase Fisher. Yes, you're returning some very young talent. Yes, we get Mika back. And, you know, Kyle Davis will return and some other top contributors from this past year. But, Matt, am I crazy to say I think next year's team has a similar ceiling to this year's team?
You know, maybe I've just been in the back drinking the blue Kool-Aid.
You have.
I do think that next year's team has got a higher ceiling than this year's team. I think with the guys we've got coming back, there was some real promising development with some of the younger players towards the end of this season that I think gives you reason to be cautiously optimistic. I don't maybe not use the word excited, but just Mika alone. I mean, that's reason to be excited right there.
Yeah, heck of a freshman year.
Yeah, he's a game changer type player, I think, for this team. And then when you look at, you know, Emery and some of these other younger guys have had a chance to get a season in under their belts post mission. And so I really do think that there's some good opportunity for this team to show that they've got a higher ceiling than the 2015-2016 squad.
Matt, Darnell Dixon makes a very interesting point. How many double-digit losses did BYU have this year? Do you know off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I don't know. But I have a funny feeling you do.
I do. One. St. Mary's on the road. That was the worst loss from a points perspective of the year. The year before that, they also, again, had... Let me see if I can find it. I think it's just one, and it was against Gonzaga in the tournament. Okay, so let me posit this. Let me posit this theory. Okay, now I know they don't play the toughest conference schedule. I'm not an idiot. All right, but let me say something, kind of building on something Darnell talks about in his piece. That is, I'm going to argue against myself, which is not the first time. This team that we had this year may be better than we think it is. And they just ran into some bad luck, or some people may point out maybe they weren't very good at closing ball games. Maybe it's a skill thing and not a luck thing. Either way, if that turns around, which often those things do in close games, your record in close games, maybe next year it'll be better and it won't just be because of the new players. It'll just be, you know, maybe just more experience from guys like Emery. I mean, there's certainly going to be more talent on the roster from 1 to 12. It's just how will that actually play out in the end? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I am excited to get Mika back and to see, you know, Haas's little brother and see what else we get, Matt. Sweeney has another Tweetbag question for us.
Sweeney.
I didn't know if you were going to do it again.
But that wasn't the right sound. That was the Tweetbag sound.
Sweeney. Yeah. Yeah. Did you just mess this up?
I'm all off my game. Sorry, Sweeney. I'm embarrassed.
Well, actually, before we get to the Sweeney, I'll give you a second chance, okay? Brian Taylor, that's at Boozer Taylor on Twitter, says, with Haas, Mika, and Emery back, predict what year, if at all, BYU will make the Sweet 16 again in the NCAA tourney. He goes on to say he thinks it will be their junior year, so not this upcoming season, but the season following that. And he thinks their senior year could be an Elite Eight type of run. He says, goes on to say, Final Four seems like a reach, even with that much talent, because of Duke, UNC, Kentucky, Michigan State, all those great programs that just reload. I would put I don't think you'd want to leave Villanova off that either. I think they're building something pretty cool there. But Matt, do you think a Sweet 16 run is a realistic dream for maybe not this season, but the season after?
Yeah, I mean, before you even got to the end of that question, that's exactly what I was thinking. I think the Sweet 16 run is probably in two seasons. What they do the season after that, I feel like that's pretty difficult to tell, because the college basketball landscape for most programs, okay, for some of these big programs, maybe not most, but shifts so quickly that it's pretty difficult to tell. But I think we'll have the talent in Provo and in the Marriott Center to get into the Sweet 16 in that season.
Yeah, I think this year of parity that we've had this year, now granted two seeds ended up in the championship, so there wasn't, you know, like a Butler year where you've got maybe a lower seed in there. But I think, Matt, it is not crazy to think that a 5, 6, or 7 seed could make the Final Four with the current basketball landscape.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. Not crazy at all.
Not crazy at all. And so if BYU can get to that level, then certainly they can. Matt, this is Sweeney's question for us. In the next 5 years,
Sweeney,
which of these things will happen? Okay?
I love this stuff.
All right. BYU to a New Year's Eve Six Bowl. Notice, Geoff, I did not say New Year's Six. See? I mean New York Six. I kept saying New York Six. Remember that? BYU to a New Year's Six bowl game. Matt, is that going to happen in the next 5 years?
No.
I say yes. You hate BYU football. What is wrong with you? In the next 5 years, BYU makes the Elite Eight.
So I can have as many of these as I want.
That's correct. You don't have to. We'll rank them here in a second. I'm going to flip his question a little bit, but let's start out with that. I say no.
Yeah,
I do not think that's likely to happen.
I want to say yes, but I think I have to say no.
BYU joins the Big 12.
Oh.
I'm going to say yes.
That's because you're just being contrarian.
No. I think the Big 12, where there's smoke, there's fire. I think that there's going to be. I think the Big 12 is going to have to, in the next 5 years, expand, and I think BYU is the best candidate. So.
I feel like we're, as a fan base, turning into like we're getting all dressed up for the big date.
And they're not going to show up?
And they're never going to show up.
Oh, stop.
Eventually, we're just going to be sitting in the kitchen crying in a bowl of ice cream.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Sobbing about it with our friends.
5 years before.
I'm a catch, okay?
5 years before. 5 years before Utah ends up in the. In the Pac-12, would you have predicted them in the Pac-12?
No.
Would you have?
They still don't belong in the.
It doesn't matter whether they belong. They're there. Same with Colorado. Does Maryland belong in the Big Ten? Does Rutgers?
No, that one's just weird.
But that's my point, Matt. I mean, these decisions will be made on economics, not deserving. And at the time, the Pac-12 thought they were better off by adding those two teams than not having them. Right.
But here's my question. I agree with you that these decisions are made on economics. It's not about deserving. It's not about geography. It's not about research institutions. Okay.
Right.
It's all about economics. I agree. But if the economics are there, I don't see anything different. BYU's not bringing anything different to the table in the next 2, 3, 4 years than it has already had to offer in the last 2, 3, 4 years.
Yes.
In the last round of conference.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
I don't agree.
Yes, they are.
There's not a new factor.
Yes, there is. There are two new factors, and I'll share those with you now, because that's what we do on the podcast. We share things. The first one is BYU went out and got an independent contract with ESPN paying them $1 million per game. That, to me, all the naysayers have said, listen, this independence thing's a joke. BYU is not that popular. ESPN doesn't just hand out $1 million to Boise State, doesn't hand out $1 million to San Diego State.
That's true, but people who are paying attention before that happened, people who remove emotion from it, I think could have forecasted that BYU would be able to drive that type of revenue.
You're giving way too much credit to Big 12 leadership. I don't think I agree with your statement. I just don't think people running those schools and those the athletic departments see it very clearly. They're all old school. They're not numbers driven. I think you're seeing Warren and some of these other people come in and say, we've got to be numbers driven. The Big 12 is where they're at because they made bad decisions, right? Like Nebraska shouldn't be gone. Texas A&M shouldn't be gone. They made a bunch of terrible decisions, right? I mean, sure, the SEC and the Big Ten looked better, but the Big 12 didn't make the changes necessary to keep themselves competitive. The second thing that I think has changed is what I just said about Bourne and some of these others. I think some of the Big 12 folks are worried their conference is going to implode. And I don't think they thought that. I think they thought, we're the Big 12. So what, Texas A&M? Go to your SEC and you're going to be terrible, which they have not been. But remember all those like columns and stuff out of newspapers in the Big 12 country where Texas A&M is going to be, you know, knocked around and they don't belong in the SEC? Nobody's writing those pieces anymore. I don't know.
But it sounds to me like part of your argument is that these decisions will be made based on economics, whereas they weren't made on that basis previously.
Oh, I don't necessarily. Not by the Big 12. No, I don't think the Big 12. I think they made a lot of decisions based on emotion and based on history, not on economics. Because if they did it on economics, they'd already be at 12 teams and have a conference championship game. I mean, the economics are simple. You have that game, that's millions of more dollars in your conference's pockets. And they still haven't done it. So I don't think so. But I don't know. What do I know? I'm just some guy with a podcast yapping away about conference expansion again.
Pretty much.
Pretty
again,
much.
Here we go again. Sitting in the kitchen with our ice cream.
That's right. Waiting for.
We have a lot to offer.
We do have a lot to offer, Matt. So let's do our Major League Baseball preview. For those of you that hate baseball, number one, what's wrong with you? And number two, you can just end the podcast now. All right. For those of you that have stayed, here we go, Matt. Let's start with.
Wait a minute. But is now the time you give out the super secret hashtag?
No.
I'm doing
it at the very end.
So I'm going to have to listen to the very end to get the super secret hashtag.
You'll be listening. You're on it.
Oh, I guess that's true.
Yeah. All right. I'm not sure you know how this all works.
We're recording this still?
Matt, let's start with the American League because I know how much you love the American League. Let's start off with your American League East champion.
My American League East champion.
Yes. Mm.
Can I pick anybody else?
Besides the Red Sox? Sure, they've been last place the last 2 years. You can pick somebody else. You can pick those plucky little Blue Jays.
I was going to pick the plucky little Blue Jays.
Overrated Orioles, or those...
Orioles with their weed beady
Rays, eyes. Or the Evil Empire. You can pick any team you want.
No, I can't pick the Evil Empire.
No,
but
you
can't. But I can't pick the Blue Jays.
So you're picking the Blue Jays.
Yes, sir.
Well, you're wrong. It's going to be the Red Sox. Go Sox.
Do you really think so, or is this just your homer pick?
No, this is not a homer pick. If you look at fan graphs, the Red Sox are getting picked by a lot of smart people. But yes, there's a lot of homer in it for me personally. But hey, they won today. So undefeated season still up for grabs for the Red Sox. AL Central champ.
AL Central, Kansas City.
I am going to also go with Kansas City. I think the last few years they have outdone their projections. So I'm going to say they are similarly outdo their projections this year. AL West, Matt. You going to go homer pick with the Houston Astros?
You know, I'd kind of like to.
Which, by the way, they could. That is not a crazy thing to say.
I really think they may.
Yes.
This may be the year for the Astros.
That is just a mediocre division. There's not a team in there where I say, wow, that team has a potential to be great. Like, could the Indians or the Royals win 95 games? Yeah, in the Central. Could somebody out of the AL East win 95 games? Yeah, I think so. could anybody out of the AL West win 95 games? That'd be kind of shocking to me.
That's, come on, let's not get weird about it, right?
I'm going to pick the Astros. I'm going with Houston.
I think it's a perfectly logical pick.
No, I mean, if you had told me 2 years ago how good they'd be now, I would have thought you were absolutely nuts. So who's your two wildcard teams then, Matt?
Let's see. Wildcard teams, I'm going to take the Red Sox and the Tigers.
All right. I am going to take, because I have the Indians in the Central, I'm going to take the Royals there. And I am also going to take the Blue Jays. So, Matt, your winner, who comes out of that and represents the American League in the World Series?
Kansas City Royals.
Sticking with the Royals, I am going to say the Boston Red Sox. Shocker!
Not really surprised by that at all.
I do really like Cleveland this year, by the way, too. I do like Cleveland. They have a lot of old guys on their team. I was watching the game today with the Red Sox, and they got one Uribe and Marlon Byrd. They're like a combined 80 years old. But, you know, sometimes having some veterans around, it's not bad if you got some youth to back it up. Matt, let's stick with the American League for a second. Cy Young Award winner.
Ooh, see, this is where things get a little bit dicey for me. And I start wanting to vote with my with my
heart.
With my fantasy team.
You want to vote with your heart?
What, with my heart?
With your fantasy team? Really?
I'm just messing. No, oh. Not really. No, okay. With my fantasy team. Did you watch our draft?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I was there.
Not gonna happen.
No, okay, no, it's not.
Let's not get stupid.
Your team's terrible. Okay, I'll start you off then. All right, David Price from the Boston Red Sox.
See, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's certainly capable. It's not a crazy pick.
And I don't want to just super team up with you and say, oh yeah, it's David Price.
Well, you could pick Corey Kluber. You could pick Chris Sale. You could pick the corpse of CC Sabathia. The very large corpse.
What if I want to say Cole Hamels, but I don't?
What about Dallas Cutchell? You could do an Astros pick. He's a candidate.
Yeah, but I don't see that one happening.
Well, okay. So who are you going with? Cole Hamels? Because you love
Cole Hamels. I hate Cole Hamels.
Yeah, why would you say Cole Hamels? You hate his guts.
Because I'm not picking this with my heart.
Oh well.
I think he could have a good year.
He could have a very good year this year. I wouldn't.
But I also really like Chris Sale. I would take both of those guys over Price.
I would not.
Neener, neener to you.
Neener, neener. Yeah, I don't know why you hate good players like him. I don't know why you hate him. Why do you hate him? So Matt, let's go on to MVP of the American League. To me, it's easy. It's Trout. It's every year. It's Trout. He should be the MVP. He's the best player. Anytime they don't give it to him, I just want to punch all the sports writers in the face. All of them collectively.
I agree.
Punch him in the face. All right, National League, Matt. Let's go to picks as far as the division goes. In the NL East, I assume you're going to pick the Washington Nationals.
Yes, I'm taking the Washington.
I am going to as well.
What, are you crazy?
No, I think they will be. I think they will be very good this year. National League Central, Matt. I feel crazy for saying this. I'm picking the Cubs.
Are you really picking?
Yeah,
the Cubs?
Yeah, I'm picking the Cubs. I'm on the Cubs train.
See, I feel like I'm just going to go with the safe pick and stick with the Cardinals.
That is the safe pick, and not a dumb pick at all. Not a dumb pick. If you had said Brewers, I would have questioned your intelligence. National League West, this is, to me, a lot like the American League West. I'm not sure there's a great team here. I don't know that there's a terrible team in here. Maybe the Rockies or Padres end up being terrible. D-backs, Giants, Dodgers all have things I like about them, but also things I don't. I'm going to go with the safe pick like you did with the Cardinals and go with the Giants.
See, I felt like the Dodgers are kind of the safe pick here, but I want to go with the Giants instead.
Yeah. But you're going to go with the Giants, huh?
Yep.
All right. So wild card teams, who you got?
Wild card teams, let me flip back over here. I'm going to take the Cubs.
Okay.
And the Dodgers.
All right. So I'm going to take the Cardinals. So we're pretty closely aligned there. And I'm going to take the Dodgers. So we have the same teams, just not necessarily in the same order in their respective divisions. Matt, who is your representative in your predictions? The Kansas City Royals, the World Series.
The Washington Nationals.
The Washington Nationals. Yeah. Shocker. I am going to pick the Chicago Cubs and the Boston Red Sox.
That would be a pretty cool series, huh?
That would be cool. That's not actually who I'm picking. I'm picking the Giants. But I really want to pick the Cubs. Emotionally, that sounds pretty cool. And if they win, they're only a couple, what, a year off, 2 years off from the prediction that they would win the in Back to the Future 2?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
1 year off, right?
Pretty good for a fake almanac.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's only because Biff messed it all up, man. He came back in time and messed it all up, ruined everything for Cubs fans.
Biff had the whole world at his fingertips.
That's right. So Matt, who is your Cy Young winner in the National League?
You know, I'm leaning Jake Arrieta.
Yeah, that's a good...
For the Cubs, and that's not just because he ended up on my fantasy team.
The safest pick here is Clayton Kershaw.
Right, that's the popular pick.
And obviously, I mean, he is the best pitcher on the planet. I'm actually going with Max Scherzer.
Really?
Yeah. I like his numbers. I think his stat line was a little worse last year than it should be based on how he pitched. And if he's healthy, but Arrieta and Kershaw, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of those picks for sure. I'd put Madison Bumgarner in that same discussion as somebody where if somebody said he's going to win it, I'm going to say, okay, all right. Or even Zach Greinke, though he got shelled in his first start this year. Matt, MVP this year, obviously the popular choice is Bryce Harper, and that's who I'm going with. After last year, I kind of feel like he is maybe not hit the level of Mike Trout, but he's probably the closest the National League has to a Mike Trout.
Yeah, I mean, Trout is kind of, odds-on favorite by a long shot, right?
Right.
And, but if you look at the lines, of course, the lines I have in front of me are a little bit older, but if you look at the lines for betting on this, Bryce Harper, comparatively, is pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, his season last year, I think it got lost because of some of the drama with that team. He had a all-time awesome season. He was healthy. His walk rate was good. His power hit the levels that we all knew he was capable of if he was healthy. I mean, defensively, he is not, I don't think, Mike Trout's equal, but he's a good defender, right? And Mike Trout maybe came down to earth a little bit last year as far as, some of his numbers. So I got to say it's Harper and I mean, Goldschmidt would be your other choice, right? I mean, assuming he's healthy, he's pretty awesome. Or Chris Bryant, second year player for the Cubs.
What about somebody like an Andrew McCutchen?
Oh, sure. McCutchen's totally capable of having one of those seasons. And we know how voters vote, right? MVP, you get extra credit if your team makes the playoffs. I think that's lame. I think you should just give it to the best player, the player that was most valuable throughout the season. But if McCutchen leads them in and he's close enough to Harper as far as some of the advanced stats go, great. That's an awesome pick, too. I love McCutchen.
I'm still taking Harper, though.
Yeah, I'm still taking Harper. That's what you got to do. So World Series, Matt, you've got the Nats and the Royals. I assume you're just sticking with your homer stuff and picking the Nats.
Do I have any choice?
You always have a choice, Matt.
Hey, what do you think the odds are that if this plays out the way I'm predicting it, I travel to one of these games?
You know, I always thought that with the Red Sox, World Series tickets are really expensive. Now, you're in a different place. I was in college, grad school, when the Red Sox won their first World Series, and I did not go to St. Louis, even though I was within driving distance, because the cheapest ticket I could find was $900.
Tell you what, here's the dream.
Okay, fill us in on the dream.
that it's the Astros and the Nationals.
Ah!
And then, I go to all of the games that are here.
Then you could just go to the games here. You don't have to worry about travel or maybe you get some corporate tickets because of your cushy corporate job.
We'll see what we could work out, you know?
Yeah. There's something to be said there. Well, Matt, that is our Major League Baseball preview. We're already running a little long, so we'll end it there. Hashtag Matt Picks Nats. That is your secret, top secret hashtag to see if you made it to the end. Matt, next week we will be talking NFL draft. We'll probably also talk any other storylines that have come out of spring football. But Matt, this has been a podcast for sure. We've had
Indeed.
We started, I press record, and here in a few moments, I'm going to press stop, and the podcast will be over.
You're going to make sure you press stop before I start saying crazy stuff.
Yeah. We've had to cut some of that out in the past. So thank you, everybody, for downloading and listening. Definitely go to CougarFan.com to get all your Cougar news. Check us out on Facebook, Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. On Twitter, @BYU_RiseShout. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!